let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us. The number one problem information technology can't escape is a troubling lack of women. Only 5% of senior executives in tech industry are female. Women are underrepresented on boards in the C-suite and as senior managers. Gender diversity expert Douglas Branson explores the tech industry's most pervasive problem and offers effective solutions for companies themselves in his new book, The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. He draws on his 15 years of experience in the field, showing why industry and tech fall far short despite recent advances like STEM programs and wage gap legislation. Douglas is the W. Edward Sell Chair at the University of Pittsburgh. He's been a visiting professor at Cornell, Melbourne universities, other universities like Washington, Hong Kong among them, a State Department-sponsored corporate governance consultant to New England, Indonesia, Ukraine, Slovakia, Serbia, and Bulgaria. The author of 23 books on gender and corporate governance, his new book, The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity, Douglas Branson, our guest on This Week in America. Douglas, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Great. Thank you. Good to be with you.
It is such an important book, and just when we think maybe we're making some progress, you point out that we're actually going backwards, with the number of women that tech companies are employing has declined from, I think, 1995, 37%, to 2016, 24%, most feeling that's even going to go down further.
Well, industries are very mixed, and transportation is poor, financial services is poor, and the worst of all, of course, as you mentioned, is information technology.
Yeah, and in your book, you really sort of shift the emphasis. You consider the corporate half of the equation. So often we focus on the other side, and you have some ideas, things, steps that companies can do to take charge and to reverse this trend. You start with changing the mindset, reallocate the burdens, and that's interesting because so far women are thinking it's something I have to do. Talk about how that actually is shifted and corporations have to step forward.
Well, I wouldn't say often. I say exclusively the focus has been what women can do. And some of it is rather infantile. You know, lower your voice, learn to watch Monday Night Football.
Yes.
Corporations spout noble sentiments, but they've done very little. And this issue's been on the stove, mostly on the front burner, not always on the front burner, for 40 years now. And so it's time to shift the focus.
When you talk,
hundreds of books out there on how-to books and advice books for women who aspire to higher ranks in business, and they all are based upon anecdotal evidence, like I did this and it seemed to work, or my friend did that, and we've got to move beyond that, and we have to look at the other side of the equation.
And I've had authors on for a number of those books, and they talk about all these things. And I left when you said, watch Monday Night Football. That, unfortunately, a lot of people really believe that's what they need to do. It's not really funny, is it?
It is. I mean, some of the women I know who've succeeded very well in business have never gotten rid of their femininity. They have retained their interests. They have served their family well, maybe not as well as they would have liked, but they have maybe not done it all, but they've done a large part of it. And they've advanced in the corporate sphere, and they've advanced in the personal sphere.
The book we're talking about is The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. Corporate governance expert, author of the book, Douglas Branson, our guest on the program. The book is available Amazon, wherever books are sold. You can link on, get information on the book by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You talk about tech businesses, tech industry, in fact, everybody in industry, adopting specific programs and procedures. One thing that comes up all the time when we're talking with people and how women can advance is mentoring. And we find out that women are like, I'm tired of mentoring. In fact, I probably over-mentored. It really hasn't gotten them that far, has it?
No, I I go to a lot to Australia, and I was part of a study group that studied what women that had succeeded in business in Australia and New Zealand had actually done. And one of the comments that came through, I think we interviewed 35 women at the New South Wales Library in Sydney, was that mentoring got them nowhere. It just moved them maybe sideways. But they were I'm sick of being mentored to death, was one of the responses. And so in Australia, they have started a program, they being the Australian Institute of Company Directors, and they got 100 company chairmen to agree to mentor and sponsor a very qualified woman and get her a board seat on a publicly held corporation's board. And Catalyst, the organization in the United States, made mention of that type of program a couple years ago, but I have not seen anything that they have followed through on that at all. So it's mentoring is kind of overall doesn't work very well, so it needs to be combined, in my opinion at least, with a good, healthy sponsorship component.
In the book, The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity, the author is Douglas Branson, our guest on the program. You talk about a number of programs that should at least be consideration for implementation. Lean In is something we've heard a lot about over the last couple of years, and you talk about that movement leaves companies off the hook and, again, puts all the onus on the female, doesn't it?
Well, Sheryl Sandberg is the chief operating officer of Facebook that's under quite a bit of scrutiny right now.
Yes.
And she wrote a book that had some very useful ideas in it. Lean In is one. The idea of viewing your career progression as a jungle gym rather than a ladder. You're going to make some sideways moves. And so other parts of the book are really very very flimsy. I mean, she had a husband who was the CEO of Survey Monkey, and he moved his whole company, 60-some people, from Seattle to the highest-priced real estate market in the world, and she doesn't even recognize that. She said, oh, you have to have a husband who's supportive. This is what my husband did. She was magna summa cum laude at Harvard, master's degree in business, the outstanding student at Harvard Business School. She was the chief administrative aide to the head of the World Bank, Larry Summers. And she says, oh, well, you should do like I did. And it's kind of, it's not good for the average woman who went to Purdue, Indiana, or
yes,
or University of Illinois, or Northwestern Minnesota. They're capable people everywhere, but all the things that she says are not going to work for all of those people.
You talk in the book about adjusting STEM initiatives, and that's something, again, we sort of pat ourselves on the back because we talk about STEM a lot. What is your overall view of that? Is it working, or is it actually maybe having the reverse effect?
Well, I have done 3 empirical studies, 2 of women who became CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and 1 of women executives in the information technology business. And I find that, for example, of 27 women out of 575 senior executives in information technology, only 2 have STEM degrees. I found in combining all 3 studies of 70 women, which is a paltry number, actually, because we're dealing with a base of almost 1,000 corporations, the vast majority have either law degrees or business degrees, and MBAs predominate over 50%, and 70% of the women have business educational backgrounds. Very few, maybe 5 overall, have STEM backgrounds. Now, that's a very small sample, and maybe that's one of the reasons for the findings, because as STEM gets more traction, maybe we'll have more. But I don't think so, because I think a STEM degree causes the women who follow it to be lopsided. And you can't be lopsided to rise past your first or second promotion in the corporate setting. You have to know about markets and supply chains and financial analysis and stock markets and all kinds of myriad subjects. You have to know a little bit about financial statements and accounting. You have to know a little bit about corporate finance and maybe more. And so STEM has to be at least tempered and combined with some other forms of education. I also find, though, that many programs that are ballyhooed by corporations are really have no substance to them. They just maybe have a course or two or an advisor that complements what would have called the pipeline courses, you know, engineering, yes, math, computer science, and chemistry. And so the emperor, to some degree, has no clothes, and query, as it's presently constituted, will it lead to the results we want it to lead to?
One of the things you talk about, one of the steps, is casting a wide net, and it's really interesting and shocking to read the U.S., in terms of progress on gender diversity issues, is slipping behind the global median. We would think this country would be at the top rather than slipping below the median. We really have some work to do, don't we?
Well, I have been very fortunate in my career in that I have taught for 15 years, just for 6 weeks in Australia, and I've taught several times in Hong Kong and in New Zealand and a little bit in, well, five or six countries in Europe. And so I'm very attuned to what's happening in spheres other than in the United States. And gender diversity is a much hotter topic in places like Hong Kong and Australia or in France and England than it is in the United States. It's moved from the front burner here to maybe not to the back burner, but it's off the heat. And so when you look around the world, as I've been fortunate to do, attending programs, speaking at programs, you see that there are a lot of other things that people are trying, and we're not doing much of that. I mean, and then we have this passage of a quota law in California, and I gave a talk at George Washington Law School in Washington, D.C. 3 weeks ago, and everybody on the panels was, oh, this is the answer, you know. Well, I don't think quota laws will fly in most U.S. jurisdictions. They're very intrusive, and the California law is really Joe Grunfest, an ex-SEC commissioner who teaches at Stanford, shows that, you know, it's not going to produce much because many of those companies already have at least one or two women directors. So, yeah, we need to cast a wider net. We need to look around. We need to bring people from England or people from Hong Kong. Actually, it's a very hot issue in the People's Republic of China. In places where you think that it wouldn't be high on the agenda, it is, actually. The bad countries are Japan. Less than 1% of the senior executives and directors are female. And on the European side, the bad country is Ireland. And, you know, my mother, my dear departed Irish mother would not like me saying that, but less than 10% of the senior executives in Ireland are female. So, yes, cast a wider net.
Douglas Branson, our guest on the program, author of the book, The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. Of course, at Amazon, the usual places for books. You can link on directly to get information by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You talk about looking to the future and pay attention to the pool problem. What is the pool problem?
Well, the pool problem is that there are not enough women coming up in organizations so that there will be a good array of female candidates for senior executive positions and for positions as directors. In one of my earlier books called No Seat at the Table, I found that over 60% of the women on corporate boards did not, as you would imagine, percolate up through corporate organizations. They came from academe, from not-for-profit organizations, some of which are quite big, like healthcare organizations or United Way, and from government. I jokingly said that the best way to get a board seat on a publicly held company was to be a tenured woman professor at Harvard. There are 14 women held something like 24 board seats from Harvard alone. And so that's an indirect indication that there aren't enough women coming up. And then my studies, like the study I did of the information technology field, show that the coming years could be even worse rather than better. And the other thing I find is a piece of indirect evidence that the pool is very insufficient is corporate America keeps choosing the same people over and over again as their women directors. I mean, I hate to say it because you're in Indiana, but Evan Bayh's wife, Susan Bayh, sits on 8 corporate boards.
Yes.
And that's excessive. I mean, no one in this day and age can do an effective job serving on about more than 2 or 3 corporate boards. So I call these people trophy directors, and that's one of the biggest, the fastest growing segments among female directors is the vast increase in the number of trophy directors. And then you have celebrity directors. I mean, Judge Judy from television sits on 3 corporate boards.
Amazing.
Maybe she undoubtedly is a very bright lady, but query, did she earn her stripes to get to that position?
We've got a couple minutes left in the program. Probably unfair to ask this, but one thing you talk about, the vital strategy is to ease the off-ramps and ease the on-ramps, talking about women find it necessary to step aside their careers temporarily when they decide to child rearing issues. We've seen that recently with some women speaking out of major networks around the country saying they're scared to death of getting pregnant and raising kids because that's going to set them behind.
Well, in my I did a book in 2010 called The Last Male Bastion, Gender in the CEO Suite. And I find that of 22 women who held CEO suites at public held corporations, had a combined 47 children. Several of them have 3 children. A lot of them have 2 children. So the advice that, you know, do not have children or only limit yourself to 1 child is just not based on the empirical data. And I think that easing the on-ramps, easing the off-ramps is part of the work-life issue, and Joan Williams at Hastings in California writes extensively on this. But corporate organizations have to treat all of their employees with dignity and respect. They have to treat everybody equally, whether they're gay or lesbian, or they have elderly parents who are going to detract sometimes from their attendance to their duties, or whether they're female. The only exception to that is distinct biological differences, and there's only one, and that is that in our society and among our species, women bear children, and women still to this day bear most of the responsibilities of child rearing. So we have to make room for that one exception to the rule of absolute equality, and we should make it a fairly generous exception, because taking time out to have children or to rear children maybe cuts your working life from 38 years to 36 years or 35 years. It is statistically insignificant, but somehow we have in this mentality we have in corporate America, turbo capitalism, 24/7 availability, and having children and rearing children is just like playing in a tennis tournament or running a marathon. And it's not. It's the most important thing that happens in our lives is having children and raising them and making them productive citizens. And so I'm preaching to the choir, I fear, so I'll end there.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask one more question if you've got the time. We're now reading so much about artificial intelligence. What kind of impact is that going to have on gender imbalance, particularly the tech and related fields?
Well, I think that artificial intelligence, my spouse worked for IBM for 16 years, and she was a researcher in artificial intelligence. But I think that as it's presently envisioned, it's going to replace workers and maybe lessen some of the entry-level positions for women. But I don't think it's going to have an overall great effect. Now, looking ahead, you know, 30 or 40 years, I don't have a crystal ball to tell you really what the effect. I know that people in Silicon Valley, some people are very worried about what effects it will have on this and other issues. But I'm probably not real competent to comment beyond what I've already said.
The book is called The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. Corporate governance expert, author Douglas Branson, our guest on the program. Douglas, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Book, by the way, available at Amazon, all the places where books are sold. You can link on directly by going to our website. Thank you so much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.